Hey, we need your support to keep the podcasts flowing. Go to explorationsearlylearning.com/support to learn how. One of the big things you can do is shop Amazon with the link we provide. You buy your cat food, you buy your kids' books, you buy whatever it is you buy on Amazon, you pay the regular price. We get a small percentage of it. Everybody wins. A lot of people are doing it. It really supports the shows, and we really appreciate it. Give it a try. Thanks. Welcome to the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio. In studio with me, Lisa Murphy.
Hello.
And Tasha Johnson.
Aloha.
We're talking today about the aesthetics of play.
Which means,
I'm not sure. I think we can go a lot of different ways here. I think, you know, we talked way back when with our buddy buddy Heather about seeing beyond the cute.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in our early learning programs, we maybe need to see beyond the pretty.
Mm.
I think we get very hung up on the way our classrooms look. We want the catalog look in our rooms and the bright shiny chairs and tables and we don't want the patina of play on the easels.
It's
and
like
those
it's
kind
trademarks.
Of things.
I know,
phrasing.
I love it though. It's excellent.
And so we get stuck there. I think I would also maybe we refer to this as the Pinterest problem.
Oh, totally.
Oh.
Because there's this tendency to want classroom stuff, whether it's a project or a block area, to look like the Pinterest picture. And I think we need to maybe step back beyond that and realize that play isn't always pretty. Play isn't always aesthetically pleasing, physically or maybe even emotionally.
Or even in the context of the play.
And so I figured we might have a conversation here.
And my first thought was, how much of that is because it's a female-dominated profession?
I'm a guy, and I don't want to comment on that.
All right.
But I'd like to hear you two. I mean, I'll sit and maybe I'll chime in after somebody.
Well, I'm thinking of the guy who wrote the book. Of course, now it's going to fall out of my head, and I closed my laptop. But he coined the phrase, the feminization of literacy, because as a female-dominated profession, we will often gravitate towards books that, you know, we respond to, books mm-hmm. that are attracted to us. So our book center is very kind of chick-centered, so to speak. And so we're unintentionally leaving people out, not necessarily boys, right? But not everybody is attracted to that same kind of cover. So we made a female kind of oriented literacy area. And so I'm wondering if some of that would have to be acknowledged on some sense just because it is a female-dominated profession. I mean, not that all females like that kind of cutie Pinteresty stuff, but, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm making a gross generalization that's going to...
No. Well, I'm also thinking you're putting more of your personal style
into your
room. What has caught your eye, what you liked growing up also, so you're...
Thomas Newkirk. Sorry, I just thought of it.
More gravitated to putting those items in, you know, with the books or something
mm-hmm.
too, instead of going, hey, I need your input. What would you put in here or something?
Yeah, but, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I joke that Pinterest is going to be the death of us. I think it causes unnecessary stress and competition and an overly focus on the cute and the perfect, and then we're missing the whole point of everything. Jeff and I, we said this at one point, stop defining yourself by your bulletin board. You know, I like to think that we bring more to the table than how you're expressing yourself on a bulletin board.
Maybe we don't. Maybe that's all
well,
that's going
and,
on.
Well, and being able board. To explain why you don't have a bulletin board or why it doesn't look like this or, you know, the Pinterest way or
mm-hmm.
a picture perfect way or
and where did it come from, though, that it even had to? Like, Do you remember in any classes or trainings? I mean, did you take like a bulletin board construction class?
No, I'm just thinking back to school. When I was in school, there was usually a bulletin board with a theme, you know, spring theme, mm-hmm. fall theme that the teacher put up. And then any project we had done would get pinned to it.
Yeah.
But that's the extent of mine. No.
So do we live in a world where teachers are judged by the appearance of their space?
We've talked about this, that even if they're not, they might think that they are.
Do you think, I mean...
Well, this is, in my brain now, this is hopping into an entirely other topic, but it's like that contest between, you know, I can get all, my kids all fell asleep, you know, all that kind of I don't even know what the word would be for that. It's competition.
I have new corrugated scallops for the border of my bulletin board.
Yeah. Look what I was able to buy for my classroom at the conference this weekend.
Well, yeah. And maybe stopping and think, do I really need to spend the money on this that I really don't have because it's not a high-paying profession anyway? Stop and think, do I need to buy this? Why mm-hmm. am I buying this?
Well, who's it for?
Exactly.
There what you are you go. Doing? Why are you doing it? Mm-hmm. And who's it there for?
Okay, we gotta role play something. You're the teacher.
Am I the dirty, nasty teacher that I'm going to need a shower after?
I don't know. We'll see.
Well, you might just need one anyway.
I'm a new kid.
Okay.
Walking into the classroom and
have I met you yet?
No, it's my first day. I'm four.
Okay.
Hey. Snarky four.
That kid four?
Yo.
Good morning. Welcome.
Hey, nice classroom.
Thank you.
This table, this kidney bean shaped table over here.
Uh-huh.
The faux wood grain.
Yes.
Would that set you back?
Actually, that one was here when I got here.
Huh, it looks new. Very well taken care of. Do you use it much?
I do.
Oh, I don't see a lot of paint stains on it or anything.
Oh, well, that's not really the painting good. Table.
Oh, okay. What about these chairs, these bent plywood chairs? It's not solid wood, but that's a good grade of plywood. And I like the bent wood legs too. Those are kind of old school. Are those new or are they vintage?
Actually, wow, you're bringing a lot of what I'm seeing as knowledge about furniture to the table. Those were here when I started working here.
Wow. I really appreciate the way you keep them up because on the Pinterest I've got an early childhood board that I keep. I'm very concerned about the aesthetics of the classroom.
Well, I am looking forward to the contributions you might be able to make to this classroom.
Hey, is that the art area over there?
That is the art area.
Tell me about your easel.
Well, the easel is out every day.
I mean...
I know that's not what he wants me to say.
Thanks,
the easel comes out. The easel comes out every other Wednesday.
I wasn't asking about the easel schedule. I was just the easel itself. I mean, is this a custom built or is this out of the catalog? Or?
Again, I'm sorry. I'm assuming it's from a catalog. It was here. Most of the furniture was here when I got the job.
Very, very sturdy. About your block area.
Mm-hmm.
Are those solid hardwood maple blocks?
They are.
Absolutely brilliant.
Wow.
Yeah, I think this will work out for me.
You think this is going to work for you?
Listeners, have you ever in your fucking life had a kid walk in and give a flying fuck about what your classroom looked like?
How cool would it be if they did? Could you imagine this little kid coming in throwing you a curveball like that?
I mean, have you ever met a kid who cares about stuff like that?
No. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know if I've met parents who care about that kind of stuff.
Then why do we get so caught up on that kind of stuff?
Is it in the regulations?
To make it look pretty? I don't know. Okay, so family childcare and my center. I mean, people used to joke that the yard looked like an end of season sale in the Hamptons. I don't know. I don't even really know what that means, but that's what they used to say. And it wasn't that it was dirty or nasty. It was filled with a bunch of junk that children knew what to do with. Mm-hmm. And I don't know at what point I stopped caring. Like, like I never drank the Kool-Aid of needing like some $25,000 play structure in the yard. Like I never did that. It was just a bunch of stuff that the kids could roll around or climb on, or, you know, stuff I found on the side of the road, and I just kind of tossed it in the backyard to see what they did with it. I got nothing. Do I like it to be neat in appearance? Yes, but not to appease an adult. It's because I want the children to see what's available for them to be able to use. Do you know what I'm saying? And
so they can find what they want if they need it.
Right, so it's more of an organizational thing as opposed to a it looks pretty thing. So,
you know, it's not all just...
Well, part of it is function, too. I would really like to see us drift towards an aesthetic of function in our program instead of an aesthetic of...
Pretty cute.
Of pretty cute one-upmanship kind of stuff. Because I mean, there's some sites that post the design stuff for early learning programs online, and some of stuff is beautiful, but overboard.
Well, I'm okay. So I'll put my neck out there. I'm thinking of many of the Reggio inspired classrooms that I've been able to go and see, and or even just read about or see online. And aesthetically, I mean, my God, they're beautiful. I mean, they look nicer than any house I've ever lived in. And then I wonder, well, what does it look like when the kids start using it? You know, because right now all I'm seeing is like the photo op moment. Yeah.
Aren't they allowed to use everything?
What does it look like when the little sparkly water rocks get dragged all over the place? And let me see some photographs of what it actually looks like when it's being used.
Yeah. And
I'm not implying that Reggio places aren't doing that. No. I'm just saying that a lot of times what we end up getting exposed to is, you know, the staging of it.
Yeah.
And not what it looks like when it's actually being used. Function.
Yeah. And I mean, the aesthetic I get in some places is the aesthetic of clutter.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we know and what we've talked about frequently is that kids would probably be more than happy with more space, and we often end up with programs that are so cluttered because we think we have to have seven of these
five identifiable learning centers.
It's just it's painful, and it eats up a lot of floor space. I think most kids most of the time would be more happy
with more room.
Mm-hmm. And so when you were talking about an aesthetic of function, more space, less stuff, the stuff maybe a little bit more intentional about what we're putting into that environment. And a lot of times we throw everything, including the kitchen sink, into the space, and it gets a little bit overwhelming.
The other thing I'm thinking of, I was in Orlando last week and drove by probably way more childcare centers than I anticipated seeing, and saw some of them. At first, my first like reaction was just like, oh my good God.
That's never a good first reaction.
It's not. And so I'm thinking now, what was it? I think it was the aesthetics of almost scarcity, that there was nothing. I mean, there's space and intentionally placed items, and then there's space and void, nothing, yeah. Nothing. And I wondered about that.
Like
the yard. Yeah, okay. We drove by this one and it was just a yard. It was just dirt, you know? And so with the right people hanging out, that could probably be just fine, you know? But I think where my brain is wanting to bring this back to is that just because it's pretty doesn't mean it's quality. Yeah. I think that's kind of the point that I'm trying to make. Mm-hmm. And just because there's nothing on the yard doesn't mean that there aren't awesome, very engaged people working there, right?
Yeah.
So we have to be careful with those first impressions while we also listen to the first impressions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think another thing about spaces is, I don't know, we went through a phase where people believed that all early learning classrooms needed to be painted in primary colors.
Oh, yeah, I talk about that in the gig, too. What Kool-Aid was that about?
It hurts your eyeballs. Hurts your brain. And And there's still places that are manufacturing equipment in those
red, yellow, colors. Blue.
But then, you visit a program that's got the muted earth tones and everything, and it feels different to be in those spaces.
And if an adult feels that way, think how the kid is going to feel.
That bouncy kid, especially.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to put the primary colors in, do it as accents. You know, a throw pillow, some blankets, or something. Not the walls. No, but going back to what Jeff was saying, that how, I mean, with space and everything, how we just keep, I always think we just keep putting new items into the room, but we never take anything out.
Well, I'm thinking a lot right now is about the play makeover that we did, you know, and you don't really stop to think about stuff till somebody's making you touch it. You know, it's all coming out and it's not coming in until you can talk to us about why it's going back in, and a lot of the emotion that got brought up and the attachment that got brought up and the ritual and the, this is the way we've always had it. And, you know, but yet, I distinctly remember you saying that afterwards, one of the feedback comments that you got from them was that their behavior problems, quote unquote, like went away. Because there was more, well, one, the changes, and I think, two, the intention, but three, also, there was just more room.
Yeah. I think we need to look at ourselves in our classrooms. We need to step back and look at ourselves as editors. And you think about somebody editing a movie, and they're very intentional about what they put in, but they're also intentional about what they take out. Like, we've got to take out another 2.5 seconds from the scene, those kind of things. They're attentional about not only the visuals, but the sounds that are going on in the space. And I think we need to maybe be a little bit more mindful about those things. How can we edit our spaces to be more conducive to what we want to have going on in these spaces? And that means constantly stepping back and looking at them and tweaking not only what goes in and what comes out, but how the stuff that's there is arranged. And
why it's even in the room in the beginning.
And being able to, again, articulate the reasons behind all of that.
My teachers weren't allowed to bring anything into the space until they could tell me who it was for. Who needs that? But it was $1 at the conference. I got $10 for $1.
Again, stop before you buy it.
Who needs it? Exactly. Who is it for?
Mm-hmm. Granted, I used to buy things because it was a good deal. It was clearance or something. Well, the kids will like it. We can use it this way. But then it was like,
but then you put it out there, and 4 days later, you're like, somebody get your ass over there and play with that.
Or they played with it, and that was it.
For one day, one-hit wonder.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, I could have just saved the money or just taken it and put it in a jar and see how much I saved at the end of the year, technically. Mm-hmm. So,
So what about the aesthetics of the actual play?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes play is not pretty.
and I think we...
Well, either physically or language-wise, it's not pretty. So,
and you brought up the gender thing before, so I'm not going to be the asshole guy that goes
The asshole that says it in workshops that sometimes, because I think it's a female-dominated profession, and I think sometimes ladies will shut stuff down because it makes them uncomfortable. And ladies, it could be teachers. It doesn't need to be ladies, but I'm just saying it's a female-dominated profession, and often that aggressive, rough-and-tumble power play makes people in this profession uncomfortable. And so we shut it down and ban it instead of actually realizing that it might be more of a bringing something up in us.
Yeah, because we get uncomfortable with the aesthetics of it. Rough and tumble play, I've talked about it before, running around the neighborhood when I was growing up. I mean, we were
hellions.
This was shortly after the end of the Vietnam War, and we're running around killing and decapitating each other and yelling and screaming, and it looked very violent, and it wasn't because it was play, but still that aesthetic of that aggressiveness and that violence, I'm sure is off-putting to some people.
Which is fine, and I will own that. I have no problem with the fact that it makes people uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah.
I get very concerned when it gets shut down for that reason.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I'm sure I've said it on the podcast, but that the notion of, I don't need you to like it, I don't need you to get it, I need you to respect it and make room for it.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, your discomfort is less important than the value the children are getting from that play.
I was going to say, than their development.
Well, yeah, and if it is a discomfort to you, finding out why it is discomfort. I mean, it may bring up horrible memories. I mean, you may have a crying session of why it is, but to understand why it is that way and let another staff person know. I mean, if you have a co-teacher or something, let them know, hey, I'm not okay with this. I'm just going to graze the top why it isn't, but this is why I'm going to allow it to go on and stuff. So,
yeah, we have to make peace with our buttons, and sometimes our buttons are a little ugly.
Yeah.
Our buttons aren't aesthetically pleasing.
No. That's an ugly button.
Can you cover that up, please?
You got an ugly button.
That's an ugly button. And kids can smell your buttons within 6 minutes of meeting you, too.
So, the solution to this is maybe stepping back again, taking a breath, stepping back. A lot of stuff we talk about.
And relationships with coworkers, or maybe not even at the school. Relationship with somebody that is going to let you kind of kick this around a little bit and figure out what's on the other side of that.
Or just say, I need you to listen. I need to spew this out to get it more out of my head. Just listen. That's it.
Or even also hey, I don't want to shut this down. You're more okay with it. Yep. I'm going to go kind of work the room while you, like tap me out here. Let's switch sides here for a little bit. But that is assuming that you get along with your co-teacher.
Well, yeah.
On some of the last pods assumption.
If you're going to have a co-teacher, you should be involved in the hiring process of that person, so...
Yes,
another.
No, that was actually, I trolled that on the Facebook too, and there's been some really, really awesome responses. Uh-huh. Sidebar.
Oh, wait, maybe that'll be another episode. In your center, you kind of, I never visited, but my understanding is you kind of tried to meld the feeling of a family program with a center program.
I did. I took everything I loved about both of them and attempted to put it under one roof. So when you walked in, there was a living room off to the left and, you know, coffee and snacks, and then the reception desk, and then the classrooms went off on either side. Mm-hmm.
I think another aesthetic that comes across way too often in early learning settings
is a sterile
institutionalized.
It smells like a
institutional setting. Yeah, and it just doesn't feel friendly or inviting, and
it was cozy. You know, cozy.
If
nothing else, I wanted it to smell good when you walked in. I wanted it to look good, but I also wanted to send very strong messages upon walking in of like, what you're going to get here, you know? So there was like nothing but process art, you know, like there was no illusion as to like what you would be getting sent home, you know? Uh-huh. So at first glance, we started to kind of get their eyes accustomed to what they're going to see then when they go further into the school.
Yeah. This, the whole aesthetics thing here goes into the idea of the experience architect. This is actually a job. I think I've talked about it before. There are people I learned about. I think the book is the 10 Faces of Innovation. I think is the title of the book. Aesthetic architect is a job. There are people that go out and they design the experiences that we have when we engage with a brand. Huh. There are people that design the experience of a web page. There's a reason that the Google home screen is
just what
it's
the
is. Way it is. It's a very, very minimalist kind of thing. I think she was like employee number 27, and her job forever, I don't know if this is still, but in this book I read about this, her job was she was in control of that homepage, and you had to go through her before you could add, and the whole thing was because they wanted to keep it very minimalist. And you compare that to the pages where pop-up videos start playing this kind of stuff. And so they're having that experience when you visit a website, but this also holds true with real brick and mortar businesses. There's the experience you have when you walk into a Starbucks. There's the smell, there's the music playing.
Well, it's all your senses. What am I, touch, smell, taste, see, hear? Yeah. How am I feeling? How am I looked at? Do they know me?
None of that is by accident.
These
people with this job of experience.
So who does this for childcare centers?
Well, exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, very few people do this for child care centers, which is why maybe we need to be better at stepping back and taking on this role ourselves. What are the experiences that children have when they walk into your program? What are the experiences that visitors have? What are your experiences that parents have at the beginning and end of the day?
How is what they're having different or similar to what you think and or are wanting them to have?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Where's that disconnect?
So we need to, I think we need to be
a little... We need to invent a job.
Well, anybody wants to pay me to come and be their experience architect, I'd be happy to.
Well, yeah, and it wouldn't be cookie cutter either. It'd be individualized
It would have to be. Yeah. But, well, hold on now. I'm thinking of some of the, like, really well-known franchises.
Well, they...
And I'm wondering if they perhaps, because sometimes there is a similar kind of feeling...
For the childcare or other businesses?
No, for like a childcare franchise, okay. Right? So,
yeah.
So
well,
big ones. I'm wondering if they actually have somebody on to make sure that there's kind of a consistent experience with the brand.
They're at least working with the same designers.
Yeah, I can understand
for their
that. Brand and stuff, but I mean, I think they can be cookie cutter looking or something, but it should be tailored to who you're providing the services to.
And so now I'm thinking of the hotels. I mean, every single Hilton Garden Inn that you walk into looks exactly the same.
Yeah.
Every single Hampton Inn looks exactly the same.
Yeah, they want you to have that experience.
Yeah.
Banks, there's a reason that you see the security cameras and some of them still have that security person standing there because they want you to feel
safe.
Mm-hmm. When somebody walks into your program at the end of the day, do they smell the diaper pail that hasn't been emptied for the day? Do they see the sanitizer? So do they smell that bleach water?
So I'm wondering if there's some. I feel like I've said wisdom like 99 times today, so I'm hesitant to say some wisdom in, but like to barf out what you would like to think that people are receiving from your program. This is what I think people are getting. And then bring some people in and get some feedback.
Well, just like, you know, updating your policy or your handbook and stuff. Is it still reflective when you first started? Is it reflective this year or something?
Well, checking in occasionally.
Yeah, exactly. Do it with your...
We don't even smell the smell anymore because we're coming in every single day.
Yeah. Well, like Roger, my old licensing guy, used to say that I'm here. My job is to be fresh eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not here to make trouble. I'm here to look at things with fresh eyes because you're here every day, and mm-hmm. there might be things that you're missing when it comes to health and safety. And I think maybe having somebody take a peek at the program with fresh eyes as far
aesthetics.
As the aesthetics
and the
of
sensory
the program. Because it does matter, and kids don't walk in and wonder if that new $800 kidney shaped table is made by whatever manufacturer.
They want to know, can I touch those blocks?
Yeah, and
is it okay if I spill
those bits of the environment, how they can interact with them, what they can touch, what they can't touch, matter to them, and so I don't know, it's just I thought it was a fun thing to talk about.
Oh yeah,
I think it was.
And we knocked out half an hour, so you know.
Lovely.
Anything else we should throw in here? So hey, people, pay attention to your program's aesthetics. Not only the physical aesthetics, but the aesthetics of the different kinds of play that take place. And think about how you can maybe step back and take a breath and embrace the things that are maybe a little bit uncomfortable now and again, because there's probably some benefit in that. Join us over at playvolutionhq.com. Become part of the community, because we can't build a community without you. Join the Playvolution. I don't know. We still got to come up with a catchphrase
like
of some sort. What my hope is that some of the users will come in and maybe come up with the catchphrase for the play. So that'll be crowdsourced by the community.
Oh, very
crowdsourced.
Nice. I like that.
Oh yeah. Hey, see you soon with another episode. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Go ahead, Rowan. Say bye bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the show. Join us online at playvolutionhq.com and learn how to support the show at explorationsearlylearning.com/support.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.